A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 460. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about The Borrowers. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
The Borrowers ran for two series, six 25-minute episodes in each one, on the BBC in 1992 and 1993. And it's based on a classic children's series of novels with all of the trappings of a BBC kids show, including costumes, sets and effects, and so on. And it is about this race of tiny people who live in our houses and borrow things to survive. So they take bits of food, small objects they can use as furniture, and so on and so forth.
Indeed, yes, absolutely classic TV stuff from the BBC, children's classics. So last time we talked quite a bit about the first season. Let's touch briefly on the second series from 1993, because the first show was so successful that the BBC were very quick to go straight into a sequel. And it's pretty much exactly the same team, same screenwriter, same director, same cast, and so on. We find the Clock family after the sort of displacement from the adventures in the first series. We find them living with Homily's sister and her harpsichord family. But relationships are strained, as they often are, and we have to go and stay with our family members for any long period of time, Brian.
And meanwhile, Mrs. Driver and Mildeye are plotting to capture the borrowers and, of course, turn them into a sideshow attraction. So we still have some of our villains from the first season. And the Clock family is in for hard times, as they will have to venture out into the outside once again.
They do indeed. And without giving too much away, I'm going to say that a possible good place for the borrowers to live might be a model village where they end up in for a while.
Yes, very nice, of course.
Now, let's talk about some of the tropes of children's television that we've touched on before. Let's go back to the source material and Mary Norton in 1952 conceiving the idea of the borrowers as a way of explaining to her own children why things, small objects, might be disappearing and they couldn't find them. And she imagined that there was a race of tiny people living their own complicated lives under the floorboards of their house and in the nooks and crannies and so on. And of course, using the small household items as tools and parts of the furniture and so on.
Yes, and it seems that folklore along those lines has existed for centuries. And it's a little bit similar to the idea of children's toys coming to life when they're not being used by the children, and getting into these ideas that just beyond what you see at home, there might be something smaller and something more involved happening.
Another world just at the edge of our perception.
Exactly. And The Borrowers has also been interpreted as a commentary on post-war austerity and rationing and, you know, the value of these items and so on.
Now, you know, I find this fascinating, Brian. Listeners will be familiar with me being interested in the effects of particularly World War II on British children's literature. And at the time Mary Norton was writing The Borrowers, Britain was still, as you say, in the grips of austerity, a period when make, do and mend and scrimp and save were basically ways of life for most people. You know, it's amazing to think that post-war rationing didn't completely end in the UK until 1954, which seems astonishing to me now.
Yeah, almost 10 years after the war, those impacts were still lingering.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, we've got George here being sent away for the summer holidays to this country house. I believe there's a grandmother who's poorly upstairs who we never see, and instead he's left to the sort of administration from Mrs. Driver.
We never see the owner of the house. We only see the servants and the grandson.
Yeah, strange. So we've got that slight separation anxiety, which we've talked about before with a lot of children's literature. But then we've also got this idea of the borrowers as, you know, having to make do, using objects and doing their best with them.
Yeah, that's interesting and relates to some of those rationing ideas and the like. What this reminds me of a little bit is the Chronicles of Narnia, that also tied into children being sent out to the country. And, you know, in this fantasy world, food is a big part of it. And when we covered an adaptation of the Chronicles of Narnia, I talked about how for those books that were written during a time of rationing, we see this fantasy world where food is abundant and described in very significant ways, you know, as a big thing.
Yes, and of course, sweets and Turkish delights become, they're a major sort of plot point in the first book and the first part of that series that we watched.
And there's a banquet, and there's a homemade meal that's sumptuous with all the different things. It really gets into that in a big way, which I found very interesting looking at that.
I'm drifting off topic slightly here, Brian, but they also talk about this in relation to the Ian Fleming James Bond novels, and part of the reason for their post-war success was that Bond enjoys wonderful foods and drinks, which at a time of austerity and rationing were not available to most people.
Yeah, that would have been starting around the end of the time for rationing, but yeah, for sure. But we should start talking about some of our own thoughts and feelings about the borrowers a little more than we already have. So, Eamon, what did you like about the borrowers?
Well, I'm going to start with the very familiar stuff for us, Brian, which is that this is a BBC classic children's production for their Sunday tea time slot. And as such, it gets all the bits that the BBC we know are particularly good at. I think the costumes are great. I love the idea that the sort of the borrower's costumes are held together with what I presume are tiny shirt buttons, but look quite huge buttons on them and so on. So I think the costumes are great. I think the sets, particularly when they've built the homes of the borrowers with all these bits of furniture and tools made from everyday objects, I think all that stuff looks really good. What did you think about the look of the production, Brian?
I did like the look of the production, and I will look at that in a slightly different way and say I think the world building in this is wonderful, and that's through the visuals and also the dialogue and the descriptions. They give us this world of the borrowers being hidden in clocks and in different places and running around, staying secret, and seeing all of these items that are much too large for them and how they find uses for them. So that way of sort of building this world, I thought was really lovely.
Yes, it is delightful to be in the world of the borrowers with all this sort of charming costumes and sets and everything and the way they use the objects. What about the CSO work for 1992? What did you make of that?
I thought it was okay. It does look a little bit dated now, but I think they accomplished what they were doing in a really solid way, and I didn't find it interfering with my enjoyment of this at all. So I thought it was fine.
I'll also say, while we're talking about design features, that the sound, the music by Howard Goodall is lovely. And I particularly enjoyed those charming opening titles of the illustrations from the original novel by Diana Stanley with the music by Howard Goodall. That's almost one of the most charming features for me, is that.
What did you think of the writing?
Well, obviously Richard Carpenter is adapting here rather than doing his own thing as he did with Robin of Sherwood and Catweasel. I think there are elements of the original writing that sort of drag a little bit at times, Brian. This will be when we get into some of the cons of it. It does manage to produce a cliffhanger for the end of every episode, so I like that. But at times, things seem to drag along a little bit. What did you think?
I quite like the writing. I actually thought the pacing was good. I didn't find it dragging. And I do think those cliffhangers were very well done. And all in all, I quite liked the writing in this.
So we turn to the performances, and we've got some big names in the cast. What did you make of them all, Brian?
Well, it varies. I think Ian Holm and Penelope Wilton did a lovely job. I really enjoyed their performances as the couple Pod and Homily Clock. I think Sean Phillips as Mrs. Driver, not surprisingly, was excellent in this and helped drive things forward as a villain. And some of the other villains, Toby Haygarth as Mild Eye, David Ryle as Camp Oral as well. I thought they were good too.
Yeah, I thought the cast were great, and I thought they would all do an excellent work. Some of the younger actors, and particularly when we get out of the sort of main world of the Borrowers, perhaps struggle a little bit against the big names. But when you're up against Ian Holm, Penelope Wilton and Sean Phillips, I suppose that's not terribly surprising. I know you sort of, you had some comments about the younger actors, Brian.
Yes. So you had Paul Cross as George, who was okay. He wasn't up to the standard of some of the others, but he was okay. Rebecca Callard as Arietti certainly had her moments in this, and she was quite charismatic, but there were times when she let it down a little bit. When the Clock family was on their journey outside, and you had the two parents, you know, being concerned and struggling with this and all of this, and Arietti just looked like she thought it was really cool to be here. She was smiling. So there were some moments with her performance that did not work as well, I thought.
Right. Okay. I mean, as you say, it's tough competition when you're up against Holm, Wilton and Phillips and so on, isn't it?
With young actors, it's always a challenge. So I'll say, you know, this is getting into the negative side of things. That was probably what let things down the most and was the biggest negative for me, was the performance of the younger actors.
Right. I will say that the whole thing, as I've put in our notes, Brian, is absolutely utterly charming Sunday tea time stuff for me. It's certainly, The Borrowers is a charming show, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it takes the charming elements of the source material and makes it live on screen. It does that quite well.
So if we turn, we've mentioned a few already. Were there any other negatives that you had about this show, Brian?
I don't think so. On the whole, it worked quite well. It's one of the, getting later into the time that things were being done in the older style, it still has things in common with how television was produced in the 80s.
Yes, you can see those elements in it. I noted, of course, the pacing at times. Now, I think with a child's eye, watching this show and watching the Borrowers struggling their way through a giant landscape, trying to ascend a flight of stairs using fish hooks as grappling hooks and thread as rope, I suspect all that stuff really sort of like grips you as a child. But I found some of it as an adult dragged a little bit for me. you know, I wanted to get on to the next scene or cliffhanger. But apart from that, not much else for me.
Yeah, I do think it used the episodic structure and the cliffhangers very well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Richard Carpenter managed to produce a script that's got a cliffhanger at the end of every episode, and that continues into season two as well.
Yeah, and sometimes you have those things where they do cliffhangers and sometimes they end up being a little bit iffy. But these were pretty solid cliffhangers. They were engaging and they made me want to see the next one.
Terrific stuff. Okay, anything else you wanted to say about it before we move to our recommendations?
I don't think so. I think we should move on to recommendations.
Why don't you go first, Brian?
Okay. I will recommend this, especially with series one, which is easier to get a hold of and sort of includes the heart of what they're doing. I think it's all there. It's a charming children's show. It works as these individual episodes very well. So if you enjoy children's TV at all, or even if you are wanting to show this to children now, I think that would work well. I think it really is a show that works well, so I will recommend this.
I'm going to say pretty much the same. I'm going to say series one of The Borrowers, especially as at the moment as it's cheap and easily available, is highly recommended. Give it a look, see what you think. It's utterly, utterly charming. And as I say, it's classic British BBC Sunday tea time stuff. Season two is more of the same and is also now getting expensive and hard to get hold of for some reason. So unless that crops up on streaming or unless you want to use the rental site, I would probably wait on that one, but I would go for season one. So for season one of The Borrowers, it's two thumbs up from us here on British Invaders, Brian.
Okay, very good.
But as ever, if you've seen it and you agree or disagree, please do get in touch and let us know.
Okay. So, in summary, The Borrowers introduced us to the Clock family, who are a group of 6-inch high people who are known as borrowers because they borrow, or really steal, items from the human world and take them in order to live with things. So they end up with small pieces of cheese and different types of food that become a much larger thing for them, and all sorts of small objects become furniture and all of this. And we see this family interacting with full-sized humans for the first time and coming under threat and having to leave and go on a journey, which will lead to a conclusion for series one, where they end up with these other relatives and then have further adventures in series two.
Do get in touch and let us know if you were as charmed as we were.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this. And if you remember it from when you were a child, we'd love to hear about that too.
And also, we'd love to have your company next time when we're sticking on the BBC. But otherwise, I'd say, Brian, we're having a complete change of pace. We're moving to 2006 for a very adult show, a version of none other than Dracula again. An adult show that was sort of sold on its sexiness to us as well in the advertising campaigns.
Yes, so it will be something a little bit different to go in our spooky Halloween slot.
Absolutely.
Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. That includes the ones that are no longer in the podcast feed. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. We are also on Threads and Instagram. We are British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, do give us a follow on all the social media and come by the Voice of Geeks Network for more geek-related content, podcasts, streaming, gaming content, and so on. Find us at vognetwork.com for the Voice of Geeks.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off and noting that somebody seems to have borrowed my pencil.